Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Dandy Zhu, and you're listening to Digital Health Forward, a podcast dedicated to sharing the stories of healthcare entrepreneurs, leaders, and executives who are moving the digital health industry forward. Today, I had a chance to chat with Dan Brillman, co-founder and CEO of Unitas. Unitas is the leading outcome-focused coordination technology company, connecting healthcare, government, and social services together to address the social determinants of health. Together, these partners are leading the care transformation movement towards whole person care. In this episode, Dan and I chat about his personal story, what led him to join the Air Force Reserves, and ultimately what led him to start Unitas. Stories from the early days building Unitas for veterans and then transitioning to the healthcare market. The impact and importance of social determinants of health on health outcomes, why we should care, and much, much more. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hey, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. I'm excited to learn more about Unitas and your personal story, and wanted to start there, actually, if you want to tell us a little bit more about your background. How does one go from being an Air Force Reserve pilot to VC and then starting a health tech company?
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for having me. It's always great to go back to my story, because for any entrepreneur listening, it doesn't have to be a linear path to get to where you want to go. So my story is all over the place. I grew up in Philadelphia. I went to Yale University and undergrad, and worked in finance and consulting for a few years after Yale. And I didn't enjoy that part so much. And I always wanted to serve in the military. And I really wanted to serve, in a way where I could still have a civilian life and be able to, stay closer to my family and things like that. Now, some of that didn't always hold true, but the best way to do that for me was the Air Force Reserves. And so I joined as a pilot, went to a lot of training in Mississippi and Alabama for several years to learn to fly planes, which is a wonderful experience. And then came back to the East Coast in New York. And really, I've been around, ever since, but I spent a lot of my 20s deployed to the Middle East. And so a lot of flying, combat flying in the Middle East, and several deployments, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then I went to Columbia Business School in 2010, graduated in 2012, did another deployment after, right at the end of business school as well. But, I wanted to go to business school, and, for a couple of reasons. I learned a lot about leadership in the military and really learned how to build teams and manage teams, and has nothing to do with flying planes. It's about how do you all go on a mission together and accomplish that mission, and in very complicated situations in the Middle East and things like that. And business school is a wonderful experience. And, how I got to become an entrepreneur was luck, honestly. My mother was an entrepreneur and still is, started several businesses and successful there. And I learned a lot, of more of EQ stuff from her. But, after my first year in business school, every entrepreneur that starts a company that I talked to, had saw a problem, right? And wanted to fix that. And my problem that I saw was that, veterans that I served with and the military folks that I served with overseas started calling me because they thought I could solve all their health and social service issues. Thought I was smart because I had a couple Ivy League degrees. And it turns out I knew nothing about it. I literally knew nothing. And so I was so frustrated I couldn't help them. I tried to do everything I could to help them. And what I was doing was looking up on lists of services, calling agencies around the country to try to help them, ranging from housing to behavioral health to employment to how do I get healthcare? I'm not eligible for the VA. And all this stuff was such a maze. I became so frustrated, I wrote a paper about it and in an operations class, and how this could actually, healthcare and government and community-based organizations should be really working together, because it wasn't just one thing that people needed. It was always multiple, right? Over the course of their life or simultaneously. So, in summary, that paper got in the hands of the dean at Columbia and got it to a venture capitalist who happened to be a West Point grad who ran a venture fund. And he said, come work for me. Don't go back into finance. And so I worked for his fund, Scout Ventures, still, very much a part of that. And as an investor in Unitas as well, too. And and said, basically build this out. And I met my co-founder at the same time as a West Point grad. And, we kicked it off there. So as you can tell, not a linear journey to getting into entrepreneurship and starting a company.
It makes a ton of sense when you look back on it, though, right? And there's such this organic evolution of the idea coming to you and something that was so clearly a problem that needed to be solved that, you know, our current systems were not solving. How did you even start? What were the first things you guys tried to build? What did you start in a region? Do you start with a specific type of service? Like there's just so many problems there, right? And there's such structural ecosystem problems that not only one person's involved in. So like,
absolutely, great question. I mean, so we started in 2013. So, you know, technology has evolved in the 9 years we've been in business, right? Software was not in the same place it is today. And, you know, how, and then thinking even about how hospitals and government services and community-based organizations and nonprofits used software back in 2013 was not the same as it is today. So, you know, getting this off the ground, we had to start something. And we always, it's amazing, 9 years later, you know, the vision and the mission has not changed a bit. Which is just really, really amazing. However, you know, we had to get something off the ground. And so, you know, some of the things that we did early on, first and foremost, and we'll talk about this as we go through, is we started with veterans and military families as our focus. We didn't try to boil the ocean. We started with something we knew really well that was close to our hearts, that we know we could actually, you know, go impact immediately because of our relationships, right? And so forth. And, you know, we built the wrong product actually before we even incorporated the company. And it was basically a consumer facing. It was almost like a chat, but almost like a social
like
network,
a navigation
where they could talk to each other. Veterans and their families could talk to each other about services, find services as like a, you know, a Yelp. And it like failed quickly. Basically, people are like, I can't, how am I supposed to get to these services? It's the same thing. I have to call, right? Like it was, and they, you know, veterans will call you out. They'll tell you if it works or doesn't. And so as soon as we basically got running, we were like, no, this is not the solution, right? Same business, same mission, but we really need to focus on the supply side. We need to actually coordinate these services. They need to be actually to be able to securely speak to each other about Dan Brillman so that Dan Brillman, the veteran, doesn't have to go to all these services on his own 7 times and tell a new story every single time. So that's how we, you know, and most importantly, you know, we were tracking, you know, Taylor, my co-founder, is a volunteer for a nonprofit. He was doing this on Excel. And what did we both care about? We didn't care about just the connection. We cared about, did they actually get the service? That was the hardest part, that last mile. And so that required us to say, can we actually not only connect these organizations, this supply and of services, but can they actually track the outcome that veteran got the service that they needed, right, from that organization. So, you know, we quickly pivoted in a great way. And that's been the focal point since the early days.
There's so much there that I want to unpack. But before we do that, in terms of what you guys have built in the journey, can you just share a little bit more context around some of these problems and why these social services and these other social determinants of health are so important for health outcomes and healthcare, and why we should be thinking about this on a healthcare podcast?
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, the great news is that the term social determinants of health is now the coolest term in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
It's a top priority in the industry. And I did not know what that term was in 2013, but nonetheless, it really drives from the majority of your health and my health are driven not by my visits to the doctor or my interactions with the medical system, but it's everything outside of it. It's where I live. It's where I grew up. It's where I work. It's where I play. Is that definition? And so, you know, if your health is driven by everything, the majority outside of what's going on in the doctor's office, which is not frequent, right, or should not be frequent, that means that we need to have a system of care that takes care of you outside of the medical system. And so that's really where it comes from. And obviously now as a focal point, it's very clear, you know, COVID obviously put a focal point on that, especially with the lens of health equity and disparities, right? And so, you know, that just coming from a thesis that your health is driven not in the medical regime or the system, it is driven in the community, requires a system of care that can take care of you in the community.
Right. And before Unite Us, what did that experience look like for veterans? Like, what did they have to go do in order to get these services? Yep.
So a couple different ways. These organizations that serve people's needs have been around for many, many years. That has not changed. How they worked with each other has obviously drastically changed, you know, with Unite Us. But prior, it was on the veteran, the family member. And now, you know, we serve hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. it is the same experience. There is no difference between veterans and Medicare and Medicaid. It is on your own. It is on your own to navigate the system of healthcare, medical care, government services, and then a broad range of community-based social services. So none of them talk to each other. None of them could coordinate. And so it's on your own. You have to navigate yourself. And so when we worked with and we still do an organization, an Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse, they surveyed 13,000 veterans about what's their biggest problem about, you know, transitioning to the civilian life. And you would think the answer was my healthcare, my employment, my benefits. Nope. It was navigating the sea of goodwill, right? The sea of services. And that's the same thing we see for all the populations we serve now as we've expanded greatly to serve all populations.
Did you feel like starting with veterans made the product more specialized in any way or better in any way than if you had started with another population that was perhaps less of a power user? I'm not sure the right way to phrase it, but you know what I mean?
We would not be where we are today if we didn't start with veterans. So veterans are the petri dish of American society. They are all ages and races and economic backgrounds. It is everyone, right? Veterans are old and young. They are generations. It is everyone. And so, you know, looking back, we started with the most diverse population. And our first network that we built where we got these organizations coordinating services was in the hardest city in New York City. And so, we got our reps really early in how you do this work, right? And so I think we're lucky that that happened. We're actually lucky no one knew about us for 4 to 5 years, honestly. Like the market, you know, the healthcare, broader healthcare market. We didn't start selling and going into the broader healthcare market until 2017, 2018. And so we got enough reps by starting with that population. We still really focus on that population, but it helped us learn so much about how to do this and then how to actually do it at scale in many cities. We did it in about 15 cities. And then what we found was that these organizations that we got on our system, our software, didn't just serve veterans. They served everyone. So a food pantry, they serve veterans. They serve everyone. And they started saying, hey, we're already connected in your system with all these trusted partners. This is great. And now these hospitals are asking us, right, to do this. And these insurance companies are asking us to address people's needs. And, you know, and so can we do that? And so it was really a natural growth period for us, right? And an extension into the broader, I call it the healthcare market. But I think we're really lucky to be able to prove the model out with the military population, which of course is the closest to our heart as veteran founders.
Yeah. And where did you go after that? What was the next population, or was it just mass market afterwards?
No. Yeah. So great question. Our next growth was in New York, focused on Medicaid. So in Medicaid in New York was going through a Medicaid transformation, meaning that the Center for Medicaid and Medicare, you know, had a funding period that called for innovation to help integrate community-based organizations with healthcare providers and payers. So it was a perfect time, right, to actually go do that in a market. And the good news is we already had networks in place, as I was saying, right, that were initially focused on veterans, but they started serving all populations because these end organizations didn't just have a veteran program, they had all different types. And so Medicaid was a really good entry point to serve that population. You know, our really breakout was in North Carolina when we already had 4 veteran-focused networks across the state there, regionally focused, and the state of North Carolina procured us for as their infrastructure for integrated health and social care across the entire state for the whole population, for 100 counties and all populations. So, you know, that was our first foray into, can we do this at scale across an entire state for all populations, which was, you know, there was a gear towards Medicaid, but nonetheless, we already were serving veterans there and their families. And so that was a really breakout part for us in 2018.
Before that, before healthcare, I guess, what was the business model?
Yeah. So it was always a software as a service and organizations. We typically had a single payer for the network or a braided funded model where multiple parties would come in to fund, right, the technology to bring these organizations together. So the business model so much hasn't changed. And who we've sold to is, of course, obviously grown and been very diverse now as we've continued to grow across 42 states. But it was the same business model. And it was obviously a bit more focused where we started was in the community, right? These community organizations. And our goal was actually bringing like the VA hospital into the network. And now, you know, for us, we're bringing everyone in, right? Whether it now social services don't pay for our technology, but there were, you know, philanthropy was funding it, government was funding it in the early days.
Mm-hmm. I'm always curious when there's a platform product where you have multiple stakeholders with potentially diverse or diverging interests mm-hmm. at times. Have you ever run into situations where you have to decide who are we designing for and there's a trade-off on the other side of the platform? Yeah.
Yeah. And you learn that as an entrepreneur as you scale. You know, we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of users now. And, you know, when you're first building something out, you almost want to do everything for everyone. And that's really hard. And so, but we've, you know, when you get enough reps over time, you learn from all these distinct customers and users over time. But the way we handled that was through better standardization. In the early days, and sometimes today, people want their own custom thing, not for the sake of, you know, not for being wrong. It's just because it's natural to say, I want my own thing. But at the same time, when you bring it back to the client or the person in need, you don't want them to have their own custom experience. You want them to have a good experience wherever they go. And so that's a hard, you know, battle to play. And the way we handled that was we helped bring, when we scale to a new state or a community, we help them talk to the last one and say, how did you do this, right? And so that mm-hmm. provided learnings and governance that said, hey, the way you set up this network is repeatable, right? And so that allowed us to say, okay, some of these things are going to be the same. Some things are going to be very configurable. We had to build a system that was very configurable, but nonetheless, everyone started learning from each other and said, yeah, like, why would I reinvent the wheel? I can just do what they did. This is going great. And so that's been a learning curve, of course, over time. And it's allowed us to scale just obviously a lot faster.
What are some of the biggest challenges that these states ran into when they were trying to roll it out and actually set everything up with networks?
Yeah. So in the early days of our work, you know, we would start these networks with a set of organizations that were already trusted offline and they weren't online. They wanted to coordinate services together. And that worked obviously really well. The biggest obstacles as we've grown is we had to recruit many, many organizations that maybe never worked together before. They didn't know about each other. We had to build trust, and technology is a great way to build trust when there's visibility. You know that that client got there, you know that they got those services. And so it's allowed us, you know, technology has been a really enabler for trust between organizations. And that's always been, you know, an obstacle is people want to know that their clients are getting great services. Every organization is there to provide one or two things. They never can provide it all, and they want trust in the other ones. Now, they were always doing that offline and never could know what happened. And now they do. But we had to build the right product for them to have trust in each other and do that at scale across entire states with, you know, in North Carolina, thousands of organizations serving that client together in a secure way. And so those, you know, some of those things around trust were the biggest barriers in the early days. In the larger scale, working with many diverse customers from governments, from health plans and health systems, and of course, our community-based organizations is, you know, some of them are competing with each other. And so we had to build a business model, like a network effect that allowed everyone to play in the same sandbox. And so that required governance at a state level where, you know, in Oregon, we all get together often so that we're all on the same page and investing together in the same thing. No one can really fight over a community-based organization they don't own, right? So we all have to play in the same sandbox and we had to create an environment for that to happen.
I guess tangibly speaking, if we go through a patient journey, what does that experience look like for them? How do they decide which organization to go to? Or is that something their provider decides for them? Like, what does that referral process look like? Yeah, or with them? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll tell you, if you and I try to go navigate services right now without Unite Us, it's really hard, right? We'd have to go to a website, look at where XYZ services. It's hard to do. Think about just our medical care. Right? It's really hard to do that. And there's been some platforms, right? I use some platforms that get me scheduled for a specific specialist, right? But that's like a very monetized system, the healthcare system. Now taken to government services and benefits and taken to hundreds of different types of services in the community. You know, it's really hard to navigate on your own through those types of things. And so what we've created is really a no wrong door approach where that we've created an efficient supply side that can help get that person to those other services so they don't have to navigate on their own. And they don't have to tell their story over and over again, every single time. New forms, new story, new forms, new story, right? And so you're putting the client now at the center of their care, surrounded by a trusted set of organizations. So I walk into any organization in our network, they can ensure that I get to another service on the other side. I know where I'm going to get accepted. I don't have to know where I get denied. And I don't have to waste my time trying to get to an organization that's going to tell me no. And so the difference is drastic in not only for the organizations who used to spend so much time trying to connect them with outside services and never knowing what happened, trying to follow up with both the client and maybe someone they knew on the other side. And then the client, you know, trying to do this and getting so frustrated with the system. It's just been a drastic change for them, which is obviously what we're here to do.
Do organizations market to the end user, the patient, through the platform, or how do they know, you know, they should choose one versus the other if they're eligible for both services?
Sure. So ultimately, you know, the way our system works is we're going to present the best fit service based on a multitude of factors. So, you know, in New York City, people don't want to travel from downtown all the way uptown to get a service. So we need a service that's close to you, right? So that's like one factor that you take in, you know, into those. Eligibility is a huge one, right? Like, what am I even eligible for based on my income, based on certain factors, based on my insurance, maybe things like that. And so the client has power to direct that, right? And they work with the organization. And the best part about it is they can go to any door. So we have a digital front door where clients can say, I need help. They sign their consent. They know it's secured and someone will navigate them to those services. So that's like an entry point that they've never had before. Otherwise, they'd have to just like search on their own and go on their own. The other one is through any organization in our network has the same tools to be able to get them to another service. And the way the service offerings show up for the client at, you know, as that user is walking them through it, allows them to say, hey, maybe I want to try three of these organizations and see which one fits, or I want to try this one or this one. And it's all at their directive, right? To ensure that both sides, both the client and the service providers, have the right way to ensure that they get to the right service. Because otherwise, it's really a maze. You never know which ones are good, which ones are not, right? Which ones are open, which ones are closed, which ones have capacity or not.
Right. And you mentioned earlier around the visibility into outcomes, you know, things that are actually improving people's healthcare and being able to see that. Can you share a little bit more detail around what you've seen in terms of the impact and sort of how you measure that?
Yeah, sure. So many different use cases on what like ROI means to different stakeholders. So baseline, what we talk to our communities about are network health metrics that we have defined at scale across the 42 states. And so we obviously have to ensure that the network can keep those standards. And so there's a couple of things we focus on. How fast, how efficient is this system? So does that mean how fast people can get to services? So a couple of data points are within the same day, 50% of clients are getting enrolled within that same day in another service because they got connected quickly and someone is on the other side to take it on. 84% of the time in the same week, right? And this is across 155 different types of services, from legal to housing to et cetera. And then on the other side of that acceptance, did they get it resolved or not? And so 74% of the time across the country, they're getting their needs resolved. Now, we take that 26% and continue to recruit organizations, right, and help drive payment and investment in more capacity to fill that gap, right? Because the system is not perfect yet. And so we have to know and use data to inform how we continue to invest in services using that data. So that's like a baseline, is how fast can we get people to services? Are they getting those services? And then how is it improving their health? And so governments look at us asking for, are people actually utilizing the benefits and services that we have to offer? Think about SNAP and WIC and TAMF, all the public benefits and veteran benefits. Mm-hmm. They want people to use those benefits because they will be better off if they use them. And so people don't know how to do that. And so that's why these service providers can get them enrolled in those services. Now, on the medical side, we're talking about different types of measurements around cost of care and utilization patterns and the right utilization of the medical system. And so we look at ED utilization dropping in New York, as an example, by 16% in just looking at a 6-month cohort in a small area in New York, because social care outcomes were being produced, meaning in reality, that means clients were getting connected and getting healthier, getting services they needed by non-medical providers. and not using the emergency room as much, right? That's great.
Yeah, that's incredible.
We also look at quality measures, right? And patient satisfaction measures, things that drive the medical system and their economics.
That's amazing and very inspirational. A few weeks ago, I saw an announcement around you guys launching a new platform or wanting to expand beyond the coordination platform, as it said. Can you tell us a little bit more about the vision for this new solution?
Yeah. So we now have over 5 products, and our platform, this coordination platform, is always the infrastructure, right? You need people connected. You need to be able to measure that as a community, as a connected community, to be able to do more, right? And so once you get the infrastructure in place, especially when COVID happened, we were able to capture so much more, connect people faster, keep people out of the hospital, and know when they've been exposed to COVID, things like that. But also our customers and our communities asked us for more, right? They wanted more end-to-end products that improved and doubled their impact. And so some of the things that we thought about were, okay, what can we do prior to someone getting into a network? Answering the question, who should be in the network? And so we acquired a predictive analytics company last year that allowed us to basically, prior to someone seeing that client, be able to understand what we call their opportunities for health. You know, so healthcare would call it their risk factors, but we would call it their opportunities. So how, you know, what is their opportunity? What is their need for housing and financial insecurity, or financial needs, or food insecurity needs? All those things, we could say this cohort of clients we should actually be outreaching to because their score is very high. They will need these services. So let's start proactively outreaching to them, community. Let's get them these services. And so that really powered our work in communities so that we can actually proactively enroll people in our own network. So it was a natural extension to become an end-to-end solution for our customers. Yep. So that was that's what we call like identify, right? That's our predictive analytics and our insights products that provide that. We also have a staff that helps guide the network. So there's the social work staff actually that talks to clients themselves and helps shepherd them through the network as well with our own predictive analytics, right? So, which is amazing. So a health plan can say, hey, listen, I don't talk to my consumers very much. Can you go help get them into your network to help them get services? So it's a natural play, right, for us to do that. And then of course we have our network, which serves people's needs. The other two on the other end are really where we're investing is the measurement, right? And so we have a huge analytics team now that allows us to measure the impact. We have a research and evaluation team. And so that's really what we call our insights product. And where we're investing the most is actually moving $300 billion, government and philanthropic and healthcare dollars into the community to bring social service providers, social care providers to the same priority level as medical care. In 10 years, social care providers will look the same. And I'll give you an example, since we're on a healthcare podcast, is 30 years ago, mental health was not a medical service. It was you walked into someone's house, you paid them cash, and that's just how it worked. And you know, these days, your first question is, hey, I need mental health services. Is it covered by my health plan? Right? And what is the reimbursement and blah, blah, blah. So now, you know, mental health became a medical service over time. We're doing the same thing with all these different community-based organizations that improve people's health the same way as mental health does. But you need to provide a payment model for it. You need to be able to reimburse these services, right? You need to be able to invoice and all of that stuff. And we've built a payments platform on top of our main flagship platform that allows for these organizations to be reimbursed for the services they provide.
Wow. It's incredible to hear how far you guys have come since 2013 and starting with only veterans. And now there's this whole end-to-end solution. And it's really amazing.
Thank you. Thanks. Got a lot of work to go, but you know, it's part of the journey.
It really is. So I want to shift gears a little bit to some parting reflections. I saw the recent Series C round. Given the new capital infusion, what are some of the top priorities that you guys have for the near term?
Yeah. So, you know, the near term, I talked about a couple of them, which is our insights product. So we lead now with data, which is really important. Not just the output of our network, but predictive analytics. So we lead across the company with data, and we're investing heavily in our data products, investing heavily in our payments products. And that is a real long-term game for us and vision of the company and the future of this of our country and the world, of how these things are reimbursed and managing that supply side of organizations. In the short term, really what we were saying from a business model perspective is we weren't in every state, and we still are not, but we were in 42 states. And once we knew we were providing this network to communities, more organizations were coming to be part of the network. Not just community-based organizations, but more customers were coming because they needed this product. It was almost like a you build it and they will come, right? And so we said to ourselves, why aren't we everywhere? We know how to do this at scale. We knew how to do this, as I said, in North Carolina, across an entire state. We did it across 16 entire states just last year. So we know how to build and manage these networks at scale across these states. And we said, why aren't we everywhere? We should be everywhere. And so we are now investing to have our platform, our flagship product, across the entire country in every county by the end of 2022. So that required a lot of upfront investment to put these networks everywhere so people can get help. And obviously, we know our customers will come and join the network as well.
Excited to follow the journey and best of luck with next year and expanding to everywhere.
Yeah, thank you.
So last question before we go, but any parting words of advice for other entrepreneurs, people who are trying to make a difference in healthcare and also just in the world more broadly?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple parting words, right? It's, you know, there's a couple things that I think about and things that have been, you know, talked about, thought about us as a company is, you know, why didn't this exist before? Like, I love those ideas, right? Like, why doesn't this exist? There's a lot of ones that are, you know, you can get to pretty easily, but, you know, something like this, it's okay, ultimately, to take something really big on. And so this is, you know, not only does it provide you a big TAM, right, and an available market, but it's okay to take something big on to make long-term shifts, but you want to be in it for the long term, right? To build, have long-term shifts in this. It requires change management. It requires helping us provide regulatory change, right? All these things that we're doing. And so, but I will say on the other side is in healthcare, where those are some of your customers, it takes time, right? And I said earlier, like no one knew about us for 4 to 5 years. And I'm thankful for that, you know, in the healthcare market, because I think we were probably too early, right, to introduce it to payers and providers at that time in 2013. And so it takes time. And I think that's the other one. And so you got to be a bit patient. It's very frustrating, and that's okay, but it takes time to do that. So what does that mean? You need to build a team that is in it for the long-term change, right? And so you have to really guide a vision that we're making at Unite Us. We are making generational change. Like, I want my children, I want my grandchildren to have a system of care that we've built, right? And I want that to be here for the long term. I don't want to be a short term, you know, spike and it happens for a bit. I want this to be long term change, and that's what we're here to do. But ultimately, that combined, you know, with being in the market of public health and being in the market of healthcare too, it takes time. And you got to be patient. You have to have proof points over time. You do not have to be perfect by any means, but you have to show improvements, right? And that's just the game that it takes for entrepreneurship. And the last thing I'll say is the market is willing to do it with you. When things do not exist, it'll be frustrating at times because they will, as you said earlier, they'll try to direct you in the beginning, right? But they want to be there and they want to be in it with you, but you have to create an environment, that allows for that.
Yeah, it takes a ton of time and it's really hard, but it sounds like, you know, if you can stick to it, you can really make meaningful change and impact on people's lives. So,
yeah, I mean, in healthcare, I don't know if you can name an overnight success. You know, I don't know. So exactly. It takes time.
Nope, definitely not. Well, thank you, Dan, so much for your words of wisdom, your insights, and for being so honest and, you know, sharing your story with Unite Us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.